Welcome to Around Your Community on WRGG 93.7 FM. I'm Lois Steichen, your host for this weekly program where I talk with representatives from nonprofits in our area so you, our listeners, can learn more about these wonderful organizations and the people who make them possible.
Good evening. My guest tonight is Michael Straley, the founder, along with his wife Robin, of Leah's Legacy in Greencastle. The Straley's daughter, Leah, was 26 years old in 2018 when she died of a drug overdose in Delray Beach, Florida. First, my condolences to you and your family. The loss of a child is always one of the most difficult things we humans have to put up with.
Thank you.
Let's start from the very beginning. Tell me about Leah.
Leah was a very vibrant, easygoing, but reserved young lady growing up. We're middle class. Actually, I had the privilege of teaching her in Sunday school. She always wanted to be part of the group, whatever that meant, peer opportunities, peer pressure, whatever you call it now. She was probably never a leader, but a follower. Although on down the road, we found out that she did provide some leadership. She was a very happy-go-lucky young girl, a young lady, loved school, loved to learn new things. Unfortunately, when she got to high school, the peer pressure became very, very evident. That's when she first experimented with marijuana. And in her case, marijuana was a gateway drug, which led to harder drugs, hence her journey with drug addiction.
Did you find out right away?
No. I would say that she probably started at age 14, 15. It was probably, I would say, when she was 16 years old, when we suspected something was going on. Staying at friends' houses and then not really contacting us because she was always very good at saying, okay, this is where I'm at. May I stay the night, whatever. And all of a sudden that began to change. Then we found out that maybe she wasn't at that person's house. And again, that's where the peer pressure really started. She wanted to be part of the in crowd. And I will say this, the in crowd was not running the street. The in crowd that was also experimenting with drugs were middle-class families. Families in this community that were business owners, families that were the same type of families that we were. And so that group hung out. They were close-knit. And I will say this, most of those folks, most of her peers, they were able to go on with their lives and really not have any problems. There were a couple that it led to addiction, but for the most part, they went on to lead productive, healthy lives. And Leah all of a sudden was in this vicious cycle called addiction.
She went to school here in Greencastle.
Yes, class of 2010. And she received a college stipend to go to Kaplan. And she wanted, of all things, she wanted to be a drug counselor. For the first three semesters, she was on the dean's list and did really, really well. And then along came a boyfriend who was also in addiction. And then all of a sudden, her schoolwork was put on the back burner. So it was on again, off again with her schoolwork. When she was in various sober living homes, she did pick up her degree challenge and continue on that path. I will say she never got that degree. When she passed, she was probably a first semester junior.
How prevalent would you say the substance abuse problems are in this area?
They're prevalent. And for those that think it's not going to happen to my family, and I've had that thrown up in my face, and I'm just being very transparent and very upfront. It really sickens me, and I'm not here to sugarcoat anything. It's prevalent. Leah knew about this community, and that's why when she went away to detox, coming back home, which meant coming back to Greencastle, was not a good thing because of her friends and because of the drugs that are in this community. 81 is called the Heroin Highway, and it's called that for a reason. I would say that if you don't have someone that's been in addiction, count your blessings. But I will also say that addiction does not discriminate. So don't get on your high horse and think, well, it's not going to happen to me, because it can happen in a number of ways. When I went to grief counseling, I sat beside a lady who lost her sister. She was a registered nurse, making six figures, beautiful home, beautiful family. And she injured her back, had her back operated on, which led to painkillers. Her physician that she worked for would only offer her so many prescriptions to get refilled. And after that, she started stealing prescription pads from him. They caught her. She lost her job, which meant she turned to street drugs, which in her case was heroin. She lost her family, she lost her home, and ultimately she lost her life. So you don't have to be a street person. And my daughter was never a street person, okay? She was a middle-class family. That's the thing that really, I guess, frustrates me, that people sort of turn the other way and say, well, that's not going to happen to my family.
Was there addiction in your family at all?
None. That was really the struggle for my wife and I because we didn't really know how to cope with that. I can't tell you how many times we would say to Leah, we can't understand why you can't lick this, why you can't beat this. Unbeknownst to us, we had no idea how the brain functions, and I didn't learn about that until after her passing, literally 2 days after her passing, when Kevin Simmers, the founder of Brooks House, he lost his daughter Brooke in 2015, he came over to our home 2 days after Leah's passing, and he just sat there and he listened to us, and he listened to me as a grieving father because he knew what we were going through. After he listened to us and offered some encouraging words, then he started talking about how an addict's mind functions, the brain system and the dopamine and all that. And I'm just sitting there with my mouth hanging wide open thinking, what is he talking about? And honestly, after he left, I got on my iPad and for the next 3 hours, I did research and I thought, oh my goodness, if I would have only known, I should have been doing this prior to our daughter's passing and I should have been offering some kind of help and maybe such a small way, instead of saying, Leah, I don't understand this. Why can't you whip this? I had no idea. Honestly, that still comes into my mind that I should have been doing my homework, and I didn't.
You must have started putting her in rehab centers.
Yeah.
How often did that occur?
Yeah, well, the first rehab center locally, we paid $15,000 out of pocket for 2 weeks. And we thought, oh, okay, now this is over with. And again, that came back to our lack of knowledge. It's like my wife says, we didn't know any better. And when she went to work, one of her coworkers who had a son that was struggling with addiction, she didn't have the heart to tell Robin, this is only the beginning, not the end. This is a lifelong struggle. We quickly learned that. And after she did her 2 week stint, she came home. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier. She came home and what did she do? She got connected with her friends in this community, and it was a struggle. Robin has said this many times. We as parents tried to fix Leah. You can't fix someone who's an addict. They have to fix themselves. They want to be fixed. It's all about their want to. And for Leah, and I give her all the credit in the world, she did. She said, I'm tired of living like this. I need help. And she said that numerous times. There were stints in California, which was really the best environment for her as far as the detoxing and then the subsequent sober living homes. She did really, really well out there. There were months of sobriety and she was getting her life back in order and on track. And I think she missed the East Coast. There was a stint in Charlotte, which was just a nightmare for a number of reasons. You've got to be careful with sober living homes. You've got to be careful of the environments because lots of times the owners are just in it for money. They don't care about the residents. Kevin Simmers can vouch for that when he took his daughter to places in Baltimore and in around the D.C. metropolitan area. They were just ridiculous. But Leah, to her credit, other than Charlotte, there were sober living homes where they were nice homes and she did well. Her last stint was in Ephrata. She went to a detox center in Lancaster and then on to a sober living home in Ephrata, PA. Did really, really well there. But ultimately, she stole someone's Suboxone strip. That was obviously against house rules. They said, look, you've been a really good resident here. We're going to forgive, but you do need to go back to detox. And she's like, I'm not willing to do that. She was embarrassed. She owned that. She said, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed in front of my peers. I don't want to do that. Well, at that point, she was off my insurance and state insurance kicked in, which is a big difference. And so she went to a state-run facility in Pennsylvania, and the sober living home was very unclean. The food was ridiculous, and she decided that that wasn't going to work for her. She came home, and when she came home, she announced that she was going to Florida. Her friend, whom she had met out in California, had been wanting her to come to Florida to visit her. And she announced to us that she would like to visit her friend. And ultimately, that's where she passed.
So when you began Leah's legacy, mm-hmm. What was the goal that you had in mind?
I wanted to do something in memory of my daughter. And at that point, I didn't know what it was going to be. We were supposed to meet Leah March 1 in Delray Beach for dinner. Before she left Florida, she said, "I understand that you and Mom are coming down." I said, "Yes." I said, "I have a conference to attend. I have a speaking engagement. And then we're going on down to attend some spring training games," which I had never been a part of. And I wanted to really do that. And I was excited about that. And she was actually going to be 20 minutes away. So I said, "Your homework assignment is to pick out a nice restaurant and we'll pick you up Thursday, March 1, and we'll go out and have a nice dinner." Instead, we had her memorial service in Hagerstown, Maryland. And 3 days after her memorial service, Sunday morning at Covenant Life Church, where my wife and I attend, that's where we had our memorial service. Halfway through the service, this hand appeared over my left shoulder with this card, and the card said, "Be a voice." I turned around and it was the lady who normally sits back there. She smiled at me and she gave me a wink and she nodded. And I kept that card. I put it in our walk-in closet and I prayed on that card in the morning and in the evening and I kept looking at it. And there was not one day that did not go by that I did not look at that. And I just thought, "Be a voice. I don't know what this means." Some time had passed and on my way home from work, I was driving through Mercersburg and there was a voice, I can't say it was a loud, audible voice, but there was a voice in my head that said, "Recreate the bag." And I questioned that. I said, "Recreate the bag." Audibly, I said that to myself, and all of a sudden it hit me. Because what had happened was in December of 2017, when she was at the Sober Living Home in Ephrata, there was a church group that came in at Christmas time, and they brought wrapped Christmas presents. And all the ladies grabbed those wrapped Christmas presents. But there was one present that was unwrapped, but it was in a garbage bag. And Leah, she would stand back and just let everyone else do their thing. And then she decided to grab that white garbage bag. Well, inside the garbage bag was a purse, and it was lined with all kinds of gift cards and all kinds of essentials. Because what you got to understand is when folks go into sober living, sometimes the only thing they have is what they have on their backs. They don't have the luxury of deodorant. They don't have the luxury of a hairbrush. They don't have the luxuries like we have that we take for granted. Toothpaste, for instance, okay? Dental floss. And so when this audible voice came about that said, "Recreate the bag," it hit me, the bag that Leah received. I was so excited, and I told my wife, I said, "We need to recreate the bag that Leah received. And this is going to be the start, hopefully, of something." I don't know what that something is. And so we cobbled together a letter to our friends and family and said, "This is what we want to do." Now, keep in mind, we were not a nonprofit yet. We just cobbled together this letter and said, "This is what we would like to do, but we need some financial support because we wanted to buy in bulk, and all the bags had to be the same." And so we put together a list of things that Leah had received, and then we just ad-libbed and added a bunch of things. And we wound up with about $1,200 or $1,300 that family and friends sent us. And that was the start of the Leah's legacy, purple bags. The purple is twofold. One is because purple is her favorite color, and purple is also the color of overdose awareness. I didn't want garbage bags. I wanted a reusable drawstring bag that these ladies, when they would go to their various meetings and counseling sessions, that they could use. I work in a nonprofit setting, and I knew the importance of establishing a nonprofit. And so I said to Robin, "We really need to create this nonprofit." And so we got together the paperwork, and we submitted the paperwork. And normally it takes 6 to 8 months, if not longer. In our case, it took 3 months. And we got our ENI number, and we became Leah's Legacy Foundation in June of 2019. Then we started to buy in bulk, and then we reached out to sober living homes and agencies and organizations that serve women who are in recovery. And we go in and we share Leah's journey, and we share our story as grieving parents. And that's equally important because parents that lose a child, especially to addiction, there's a lot of hurt. And I can tell you, in Franklin County, through last month, there are 20 grieving families. We have lost 20 folks to overdose over the last 6-7 months. Last year, we lost 29. And because of COVID-19, overdose awareness has really taken a back seat. And I can tell you, statewide, the numbers are up. County-wise, the numbers are up. Over the last 10 years, we've lost 500,000 people. 500,000 people to overdoses. 500,000. That's a lot of people in just 10 years. So locally, I know there's a lot of hurt. Regionally, I know there's a lot of hurt. Statewide, there's a lot of hurt. You know why? Because I still hurt. That hurt, that grief will never go away. Grief is not the absence of love. Grief is because you love someone so much that it doesn't go away. And I love my daughter, and I always will love my daughter, and I want to keep her name front and center. And I want people to say her name, and I want people to realize that Leah's legacy is here to stay, and we're here to serve.
Mm-hmm. The bags, do you have somebody make those for you? Does some company make them?
No.
You make them?
No, there's no company. No, we make those bags. We have over 40-some items in those bags, and then we supplement those bags during the winter with a nice warm blanket, a nice bath towel, and a hat, gloves, and scarf set. And then in the spring and summer, we do umbrellas. No, we do those, and I can't tell you how many times I would pull in my driveway, and there were all these boxes sitting in the front. We started shoehorning things in our house, I mean, in our closets, in our drawers, and in our garage, and really, the culmination of knowing that we had to do something as far as a storage area was when Procter & Gamble down in Martinsburg called us. They have the largest distribution area in North America. This took about 7-8 months, but Procter & Gamble called us and said, hey, we've got product for you. Hopefully, you have a pickup truck. And we said, we do. And they said, also bring another vehicle. So we drive down there, and they loaded a skid of product on my truck. And I said, wow. And they're like, oh, we have another skid for you. So they had to break down that skid and put the other product in and around the truck. And then we loaded down the car. It's about $5,000 worth of product, right? So we're driving back up the road, and all of a sudden it hit me. And I thought, where are we going to put this? Because we can't put this in our garage because it's going to freeze. And we don't want that. And so we live beside my mom and dad, and we called my mom, and she's like, well, bring it over here, and we'll put it downstairs. And so they stored that product for us. But then I said to Robin, I said, we really need a building. Because what we would have to do is we'd have to get everything out of our house, set up the tables in our garage, call in friends and family, and make an assembly line. They would go around the table, put all the stuff in, and then when we were finished with the bags, then we'd have to put everything back. I'm happy to say we now have the Leah's Legacy Operations Center. It's built on my parents' property. It's a 20 by 30 building, beautiful building that was built entirely on donations. And again, this happened when COVID-19 was rearing its ugly head, and we were getting ready to sign a contract. The builders were from up above Harrisburg, and they said, it's going to take us about 3 days, and we needed finances. And we're like, we don't have all the finances yet. But I promised my wife, I said, I will fundraise. And she's like, Mike, we don't have the money. I said, I will fundraise. I do fundraising during the day. I'll fundraise at night. Well, what happened then? COVID stepped in and the building contractor shut down. And they were only allowed to do some odd jobs up there in and around their area. And so now all of a sudden it bought me more time. So anyway, we went from March to June. And that gave me plenty of time because we're a nonprofit. We could seek grants. We could seek individual funding, private funding, reach out to friends and family. And don't you know that that building was built on love? The entire building was done through donations. Now we have a beautiful facility that we operate out of. And my wife and my mom combined to do a Leah Bugs Garden. It's a memorial garden. And if people want to go and look at the building and look at the beautiful garden, go to Leah's Legacy Facebook page. Or go to leahslegacy.net, and you'll see photo galleries of our various distributions and then the beautiful memorial garden.
Tell me about Brooks House. I know you have connections with them. Now, are they a sober living home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kevin and Dana Simmers, like I said, lost their daughter in 2015, Brooke. Brooke was in and out of detox and sober living homes, and she wanted to build a house that people could be proud of because she was in and out of sober living homes in around the Baltimore, D.C. area that were just crap holes, for lack of a better term. And she didn't want that. Her father made her a promise that he would build her a house. And she passed. She was found in the back of a vehicle with a needle in her arm. He kept that promise. He kept his daughter's promise. And that house was built on love. It's a beautiful facility in the outskirts of Hagerstown. So many success stories in the short amount of time that they've been up and running, 2 years. Matter of fact, one of the first residents that came in there, we've been invited to her wedding. She's got her life back. She's been clean. She's got 2 years of sobriety. and she's getting married the first part of October. And we're so very, very proud of her. And she's not alone. There are just so many, because they have not only a sober living home there, but they got counselors there. They got a detox area. And then Kevin said, once people get out of sober living, there's a step down. You can't really go back to your old ways and go back to your communities, like I had mentioned before. And so he not only has a sober living home, but now he has three transition houses. So what happens is they have to have a job, and they're taught life skills at Brooks House and job skills as well. And so then they transition into a transition house. And so a lot of those ladies are dutifully employed, getting their lives back together. They're reunited with their families, their children, their parents. It's a success story, and it really is wonderfully done. My wife was first involved with that because one of their social enterprises is Brooks House Chocolate, and they're getting ready to open up a coffee house and chocolate shop on the south end of Hagerstown. They would make the chocolate in Brooks House when they first got started. My wife, Robin, knew Kevin, and then she got to know Dana, and she was in on the ground floor making the chocolate. And that was really her way of coping with grief, with the passing of our daughter. And I would stay at home on Saturday mornings, and she was over there making chocolate. And to be honest with you, it was very, very depressing for me because I was all alone, grieving, and all kinds of thoughts were going through my head. And she came home one Saturday, and she said, "You really need to get involved with Brooks House Chocolate." And I'm like, "I don't think so." And she's like, "I'm telling you, you really need to come over with me next Saturday." And that, I tell you, was one of the most wonderful things that has ever happened to me in my dealing with grief. I walked into Brooks House, and those girls, ladies, said, "Hi, Mr. Mike." And they gave me a hug, every one of them. I didn't know them. They didn't know me. And every time we go over to Brooks House, it's a blessing. It's a blessing for me because those ladies make me feel so welcomed. And I'm forever grateful to Kevin and Dana for keeping the promise for their daughter to build that. And just to see all the good works that are happening there, it's truly amazing.
You've written a book.
Yes.
The Calling.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Well, again, I wanted to do something, and I didn't know really what that I wanted to do. There were many, many mornings I would wake up at 3 a.m., and I could not understand why I would be waking up at 3 a.m. And then we got the medical examiner's report, and for all intents and purposes, they said that Leah's death was estimated between 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning. She passed alone. I thought, you know, that's probably the connection. I'm awake at 3 a.m. And January 23rd, 2019, I got awake at 3 a.m. And I was in the middle of a dream. And in this dream, I was sitting on a stool in a field. And I was signing books. And our pastor walked by and said, "I told you that if you write this book, that it would help people and that people would be interested in it." And the name was given to me, The Calling. And as it turns out, our pastor was quick to point out that the name is twofold. One, the call that I had received at 9:02 a.m. on Valentine's Day of 2018 from the front lobby of the medical center where I work at in McConnellsburg. The front desk lady told me that there were two Pennsylvania State Police officers there and they wanted to talk to me. So that was really the call. And then the ING part of the title is the action part of what my wife and I are trying to do. The chapters were outlined, and so I began to write. I'm a writer by trade. I've got my undergraduate degree in journalism communications. I was a newspaper writer for a number of years, sports writer, then worked in marketing, continue to work in marketing and promotions and communications and fundraising. And it was about an 8-month project. And then a manuscript was accepted by Christian Faith Publishing, and the book came out in May. I've had a number of book signings and some speaking engagements. Really, if it helps one person, and I don't need to know who it helps, but if it helps a grieving father, if it helps a grieving family, if it helps someone in addiction, then my mission has been accomplished.
And how can our listeners get the book?
If they would go to leahslegacy.net, I'll be more than happy to sign a copy. Or they can order it through Leah's Legacy Facebook. It's through PayPal. All the proceeds, 100% of the proceeds, goes to Leah's Legacy Foundation.
I have written down National Recovery Month. Is that this month?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and that could explain the ribbons that you are wearing?
Well, I wear this ribbon every day. The red stands for drug awareness, and obviously the purple stands for overdose awareness. In the book, I talk about the ribbon. It's a part of me, and it has been a part of me probably since about 3 weeks after Leah's passing. My wife and I are a member of a closed Facebook group. It's a private closed Facebook group called GRASP, Grief Recovery After Substance Passing. And there was a chapter in Franklin County. It has now since dissolved, which I'm sad to say. But we attended that first meeting about 3 weeks after Leah's passing, and it was really raw for me. At that meeting, they handed out ribbons. Like I said, that's been a part of me and a part of my attire 3 weeks after Leah's passing.
Do you not have a community event here in Greencastle that you do something with Leah's legacy?
Well, there's a Black Balloon Day. That's typically in early part of March. That's where I met Vicki Rhodes. We put black balloons on the meters. I reached out to Vicki. Again, Leah passed on Valentine's Day of 2018, and I read in the paper that Vicki was going to do black balloons, and I called her. Got to know Vicki literally on the square, and she's been a dear friend of ours ever since, and so we do that in March. This past June, for Leah's Legacy Foundation, we had our first ever fundraiser. It was sort of like a private event because this was our first time that we had done this. But the reason why I want to share this is because I want to go back to the story that I said when I had that dream. And I didn't really realize this until my wife pointed this out, that our fundraising event, I'm a big bluegrass fan, and so I said, well, you know, let's have a fundraiser at Leah's Legacy Operations Center. And so we dubbed it Fiddling in the Field. And you got to understand, the field that's in back of the Leah Legacy Operations Center, it's on my parents' property. The field is not really a field. It's an extension of my mom's yard. Technically, it's a field, but she treats it like her yard. And so she keeps it mowed and nicely manicured. So we had a big tent up, and we sold tickets, and we had sponsors, and we had a silent auction. That was a fundraiser for us. And like I said, we didn't really promote it publicly. We had like 17 sponsors. We had like 110 people there.
This was when?
This was this past June. And people loved it so much that when they were leaving, they said, we hope that you do this again. And so it's on the docket for next June. We haven't set a date yet, but we're looking at probably middle to late June. And we're going to really promote it because we had to feel out a lot of things. Parking. How many people can we park in the upper half of the field? How many people can we get under a tent? And so we sort of felt that out. And now we got a better idea of what we can do and how many more tickets we can sell. And we're hoping to really promote that publicly for June to raise more money. We have long-term and short-term goals. Not only are we looking at the Leah Legacy purple bags and we go in and share the stories, but we've got some other plans. Lord willing, we'll be able to help women in recovery a little bit more by doing some other things that we're currently working on.
Well, thank you, Mike. This has been a great half hour. That's all the time we have. I'm Lois Steichen, and you've been listening to Around Your Community. My thanks to Michael Straley of Leah's Legacy in Greencastle. Please pay attention to the activities of this organization and their work in our community. I'll be back next week with a new guest. See you then.
Thank you for listening to Around Your Community. WRGG is dedicated to bringing you information on the nonprofits that serve Greencastle, Antrim, and Southern Franklin County. WRGG, we are GA.